evening, everybody. You are listening to Davin's Den live on WTBQ, 93.5 FM, 1110 AM, and, of course, WTBQ.com. As always, you can catch up on the older show at the Davin's Den Facebook page. Davin's Den, the show that is better than a TSA security search.
Yes.
If you'd like to join in on the control of chaos, you can call us at 845-651-1110 or instant message us on Facebook. I am your host, Davin Rosenblatt, and as always, I am joined by the one and only Joe Foot Curry.
Hi, how are you?
In his sexy voice.
Yes.
Working the board for about 45 seconds, the backbone of the show, Rich. He's got 3 feet out the door, but we just saw his back.
Ooh, yeah.
I guess Frank was whipping him again. Do it better, Rich. Do it better.
That was sexy.
Speaking of Frank will be working the board for most of the show. He's back from the mini vacation of working with us. He's been here at the station, but he had to deal with our nonsense in a little while, so we look forward to getting Frank back. Tonight, a little different type of show on tap for tonight, which I'll get to shortly. But first, as many loyal fans of the Den are aware of, this was to be our last contracted show at WTBQ. Well, we've been negotiating with the powers that be, and earlier today we reached an agreement with the station, and the show will continue on WTBQ for the foreseeable future.
We'll live on.
So obviously Joe and myself are very pleased that we could all come to an agreement. We'd also like to thank the numerous fans that have emailed us in the past few weeks to find out the status of our show and express how much they like it. Our show is for the fans, because Lord knows it ain't for the money. And Joe and I will continue to try to fill the void that has been left since all of the big talk radio stars went to satellite for money. Speaking of big radio stars and satellites, it turns out one of the premier personalities in this genre of radio has taken an interest in your pals. So we're in talks now to work with him in the new future on a project that will have you seeing us like you've never seen us before. And the good thing is this could potentially expose us to thousands of listeners who like this type of radio. And he is really one of the premier minds in comedy radio and at the top of the food chain. So it just can't help but rub off on Joe and I to a degree. So it should really help Joe and I as hosts. And hopefully the caliber of the show.
Cross those fingers.
Yeah, we're all got our fingers crossed on that one.
Cross those fingers. It'll rub off like poison ivy.
So like I said, we're still talking to them. We're excited, and we think something will work out. So you definitely want to keep checking in on the Davin's Den Facebook page for more news, because that's where Joe and I will post the upcoming things. But for tonight, I like to describe our show as intelligent jackassery. A lot of times, Joe and I lead with the jackassery.
Intelligent jackassery.
Sure, we say a lot of dumb things, but there's also a lot of good information in there.
Sounds like
Tesh, but with a sense of humor.
But jackass sounds like medieval stuff. Like we're practicing jackassery.
You don't practice jackassery when you're the masters of jackassery like we are. This right here is a prime example of subpar jackassery.
Subpar jackassery.
But Joe and I are going to leave the jackassery aside for just one night, as you know. On Sunday is the 10th anniversary of the September 11th attacks on our country. So Joe and I thought we would start the show, because we both remember that day very well with our memories. And then later on in the show, second half of the show, we're going to have definitely one, possibly two, first responders who worked at the base of Tower 2 hours after it collapsed, and they're going to share their memories and their recollections of what they did and what they saw and heard. So that is going to be some powerful radio. And, you know, if you got kids who really don't comprehend what 9/11 was about because they were too young at the time, but now they're old enough, you might want to gather them around so they get an idea of what the big deal is on Sunday and why people are so torn up about this, so to speak. But I guess, Joe, do you want to do your memories first, or you want me to do...
I'll do my memories. That day was like somebody you knew passed away. You know, mm-hmm. You had a friend or a relative, and you passed away, and you had that feeling of sadness. Every anniversary, it was sadness. But the thing is, it's like something that you share with the rest of the country, because it all affected us, you know, and it was, you get that feeling of the sadness. I'll never forget that. Nobody will ever forget that day. I was at work, and we didn't, you know, obviously you're working, you don't have a TV, so one of my coworkers goes, a plane hit the World Trade Center. And we thought, well, I guess it's, you know, they didn't know what it was yet, and we thought it was a little plane or whatever. And then we start to hear reports that it was a jetliner. And we're like, wow, I guess something, you know, is, you know, so I guess there was a plane on, you know, way to Newark, and it, you know, had a mishap or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then is that feeling that the rest of the country and the world got that it was an attack is when it hit the second plane hit the towers, And it's like, my God, we must be under attack.
You comprehended it that quickly.
You did because that signaled that this was not a random accident. This is an act of violence. It is an attack against the country. So you had this feeling that, you know, you're on guard or something like that. You don't know what's going to happen, how it's, you know, if you're going to be attacked, if, you know, what's going on. And then you heard the Pentagon got attacked, and then you heard another plane going down in Shanksville, and you're just wondering, where is this going to end? And then, like I said, we were listening to the radio. And
where were you?
I was at work. I was okay. At work. And the radio was right next to me. Mm-hmm. And I'm just listening to the radio. And because you're not seeing, you know, have a visual concept of what's going on, you really can't wrap your mind around it. Now, they just said that the Tower 1 collapsed. And it's an unfathomable thought. You can't believe something like that could happen. You can't wrap your mind around it. And then a little while later, the second tower went down, and you just couldn't believe it. All at once you had a feeling of vulnerability, anger, sadness. You know, it was just weird. I worked with a lady that lived through Pearl Harbor.
Wow.
And she wasn't at Pearl Harbor, but she was. You know, she when Pearl Harbor was attacked, she was a little girl. And I asked her, was this like Pearl Harbor? And she goes, no. She goes, when Pearl Harbor was attacked, it was thousands of miles away. This is 40 miles away.
Well, this was more immediate because she lives in the vicinity.
She lives in the vicinity.
I wonder if, like, survivors of Pearl Harbor who lived in Hawaii could relate to what we were going through. You know what I'm saying? Because it's so far away.
So far away. There's a different vibe in this area. In this area. New York, New Jersey.
Pennsylvania, Connecticut, Washington, Virginia, Maryland area than there is in other parts of the country.
Yeah.
There just is, because it's more immediate because of proximity.
And with the, you know, with targets and stuff like that, you know, what the enemy would like to attack. So, yeah. And the second part of that was, naturally, you know, you wondered if anybody you knew was in the buildings.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you had friends that worked in the city. Also, we have two comic buddies, John LaRocchia and Billy Bingo, who at the time were active members of the fire department. And we were very, you know, very concerned about them. One of John LaRocchia lost a very good friend of his, one of his best friends in the world, Tommy Gardner, who was a fellow firefighter. And, you know, he had a tough time getting over that. And, and I got home, mm-hmm. and I'm in my backyard. And I'm like, what is that noise? And I'm like, it's just a sharp noise. They're jet fighters, the F-16s, patrolling. Usually when, you know, you see a jet, it's just flying to where it has to go. They're patrolling around.
They weren't even American jets. It was NATO.
Yeah,
that was the first time we had NATO or foreign jets patrolling our airspace. You don't remember that?
I don't remember that, no.
Yeah, a lot of it wasn't even American jets. It was... We had foreign jets. I think we had Canadian jets over our airspace. I mean, you know, everybody was on high alert. But yeah, that was the place where our country was at that day, because we didn't know what the heck was going to happen next.
Yeah, and the thing is, I'm looking up at them. I'm like, my God, they're not just flying; they're patrolling. And you know, when you cut the lawn, sometimes you always daydream when you cut the lawn. Sometimes, like as a kid, I'm like, oh my God, what if, like,
you were cutting the lawn?
Yeah, well, not that day, but you know, when you cut the lawn, you know, your day cutting the lawn is boring as hell. So you know, you cut the lawn. Sometimes you go, I wonder what would happen, like, if we were attacked and stuff like that. And I'm like, my God, it's happening. So I go back in the house. It's about 5:30, and I'm going to make dinner, and I just want to watch the TV and see, you know, and take all this in. I sat down at 5:30, and I was riveted to the TV, and I'll never forget this. I said, all right, I'm going to make dinner now. It was 10 o'clock at night. I sat at the TV riveted. It just, for hours.
Well, Blitzer never looked so good.
Yeah. Just, I lost total track of time.
Yeah.
I lost track of 5 hours, you know? So, you know, as it moves on, I never forget, and I hope people, you know, as the years go by, don't forget, you know, this day where we lost, you know, a lot of good people.
Well, before I get to my memories, I want to give out our phone number. If you guys have your memories, you want to call in. Number's 845-651-1110. And I just got an instant message from our pal Joe Padula, our military hero. Joe is listening with 23 of his fellow soldiers. I think they're stateside right now. I hope they're stateside. Mm. But I just want to give a shout out to them, because they're picking up the pieces of 9/11 10 years later, Joe.
Yeah, God bless them.
They are still fighting the fight while many of us went shopping and went on with our lives. They're still fighting the fight, so I want to thank them, as always, for doing what they do. and listening. Now, I remember, my memory is shot, which is kind of surprising for somebody who really doesn't drink that much, never smoked pot, gets a decent amount of sleep. Well, not really, but still. My memory
is
shot.
Boy, I break all those three rules.
Sure, but your memory's better than mine. But my memory is shot. Yet 9/11, I remember very well. 10 years later, I remember it was like early, like 8, 9 o'clock in the morning. I was living in Hackensack, New Jersey at the time, in an apartment with my girlfriend, now wife, which was... From our bedroom, you could see the Twin Towers. Mm. I mean, we were right by New York City. And I remember I went into the kitchen where our computer was at the time, and I went online, and I see this thing, airplane strikes one of the towers. My immediate thought was Cessna. And the
Right, yeah, ours was too. Ours was too.
And the reason I thought that was because, like, the week before... Some guy got his, like, parachute stuck on the Statue of Liberty. Do you remember that? Some like, jackass.
What an ass.
Yeah, he got, like, stuck on the Statue of Liberty. I'm like, all right, here's some other guy who doesn't know
what he's doing.
Exactly. Yeah. Then my wife wakes up, and the other tower gets hit, and she calls into work, and you turn on the news, and you find out what's going on. And it's a very surreal feeling when you think that you're being attacked. And I remember I was talking to several people in the morning on that day. One of the people who I was talking to was a former fireman who owned a bar in Butler, New Jersey, called the Fireman's Pub, where we were scheduled to do a comedy show.
Supposed to do a gig that night. Yeah.
That was supposed to be the debut show for that venue. You were actually scheduled to be on the show.
Yes, I was.
So I call him up. And I go, listen, we can't do a show tonight. He's like, what are you talking about? We got to do a show. I'm like, dude, are you aware of what is going on? We can't do a show. This is the only show my company's ever canceled.
What was his rationale?
Because he had tickets sold. Because he's like every other club owner.
But I guess, yeah, being a fireman, brother fireman, that's out the window when you're a club owner.
He was like arguing with me. And finally I said, listen, they've shut down the city. My guys are coming from New York. We'll do a show next week. We're not doing a show. So we canceled that show. I also remember talking to Saad Sirwana, who's a Pakistani comic.
That we also had on the show.
We had Saad on the show. And we had very macabre humor. I mean, we were cracking jokes. I don't remember what they were. I'm sure they were in completely poor taste. But that's what you do.
That's your defense mechanism.
That's what you do.
Your defense mechanism in a situation like that.
One of the most surreal things... was I got a call from a former comic and rocker, Ace Mason, of Lebanese descent. He calls me up around 11, we'll say, a couple hours after everything starts going down. And he starts asking me if I have work for him, if I'm booking. I'm like, dude, I'm not doing any bookings today.
Are you real?
It was completely, I'm like, really?
Really?
Now
we're under attack.
Which also gives you a mindset of comics. We crack jokes in poor taste, and no matter what's going on, we're looking for another bad
looking
gig.
Looking for another girl, yeah.
So I was dealing with that, which is very minor to deal with. I also talked to our old pal, Steve Bix. Who's a booker in Pennsylvania. And that's when he told me he had spoken to John LaRocchia's wife. Mm. John is a fireman and a cop. And John's wife didn't know where John was.
Yes.
And we all believed John was down on the scene of the crime, so to speak. So kind of worrying about that. As it turns out, for some reason, John wasn't down there. I think something happened.
I think he hurt himself the night before. He was actually at the doctor.
Right. But his wife didn't know that for some reason. Yeah. So freaking out about that. And as you were, I was glued to the TV. O&A were on the radio in the afternoon.
He actually did the radio from Long Island. He did it from the island. They couldn't get into the city, so they set up at a remote location, and he did it from the island.
And they did great radio, and I was listening to them, and I was also watching the news all day. You know, and at some point, it becomes pornographic. It really does. I mean, because they just keep on... They didn't have all the footage that they have now, but they had some footage, and you see the explosions, and unfortunately, you see the people fall, and the people running, and you just don't know what's going on.
It's just... You know, just think of the heart. I mean, a plane crash goes down once every couple of years. Unfortunately, a cop gets shot or a fireman gets killed in the line of action, probably like maybe once every 3 years. You had all of this going on. in such a magnitude. You, what did we lose? Five planes? We lost, 300 firemen, 125 cars. I apologize if the numbers are off, but just even, you know, that magnitude is just inconceivable.
I remember I was watching the news, and this was the morning. I'm sorry if I'm jumping around a little bit with my timeline. I'm watching the news, and they did like a bulletin. One of the airlines, and it turned out it was Flight 93, the one that crashed in Pennsylvania, they said was having a crashing event. I mean, you never heard anything like that before. Yeah. They're having a crash. I mean, that's bone-chilling. And I looked out my window on a clear day, which 9/11 was 10 years ago, and you could see the towers. On this day, the city was covered in smoke. It was just gray, dust, cloud, ash. Everything vile that went down on that day was in the air and not moving because there really wasn't a breeze.
Yeah.
It was just hovering. So that's what you saw. So I remember later on that day, some of my wife's friends, Rob and his former girlfriend at the time, they came over because you're just glued and you just want to be with friends.
Yes.
And they came over and we had the news on and we were playing Trivia Pursuit. And I was kicking butt. I was kicking butt. And my wife cheated. So Rob could win because the game was going on so long. I mean, but that's how vivid my memory. It's probably the last game of Trivial Pursuit I've played.
Well, you should play, yes.
But I mean, but that's how it was. Now, I lived in Hackensack. I lived by Teterboro Airport, where if you're not from this area, it's one of these municipal airports. It's not like one of the big ones, like the international ones, like JFK or LaGuardia. But there's a lot of heavy traffic. Mm. I mean, all the sports teams go there. All the rich people who live in the city, that's where their private jets fly out of and everything. And we were right underneath the flight path. It was lovely.
Yeah.
We had a view of 80 from our fire escape, and we were right under the flight path. We went to bed that night, you know, after all this hours of all this mayhem. And it used to be very hard to go to sleep. You kind of block it out, like if you live by the train tracks and everything. You block it out. It was dead quiet, except for once in a while, you heard one of those jet fighters. Mm. And a jet fighter sounds much different than these little private
Markedly
jets.
Markedly different. It shakes everything up.
That was the first time that I was ever afraid to go to sleep in this country.
Yes.
That day changed everything.
That's the same feeling that's the same feeling that I got when I was in my backyard. You're watching these planes, and it's not like they're flying somewhere. They're on patrol. They're protecting us. And it was just a feeling of vulnerability, and it's just amazing, you know. You never thought, you know, you would ever live through a day like that, you know. And
we haven't lived through a day like that. And I'll tell you this. You know, people say never forget. You kind of do. You kind of do. You do, but you don't. Like, we wouldn't have done this show on the 9th anniversary. We didn't have a show. But if we did have a show, we wouldn't have done this show on the 9th anniversary, the 8th anniversary. And every year, the call to honor and respect those who have given so much, some who have given their lives. You see, the call to honor is less and less. Gets less. It's kind of like a space shuttle launch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's always covered, but it's not covered as much. They still read the names and the news, you know, of all those that fell, and the news still covers it. But it's not to the degree. Now, of course, 10 years, they're whoring themselves. You know, the media's like, we got ourselves a good story. But people do forget. And I'll tell you this. Several years ago, I was working up in Canada. And people cracked jokes about 9/11. They would crack jokes to me about 9/11 while I was on stage. And I'm, you know, I pretty much talk about everything. I don't care about anything. There are no boundaries. But I will say, though, that was the first time I was really confronted with it. And I was confronted with some anti-Americanism. Not me personally. They didn't hate me personally.
They just hated the act.
Well, there's the jackassery we talk about. No, but listen, of course, it was my act that was the reason to the attacks. They were trying to get to my house. They missed. No, but they were saying, and I'm thinking, well, I should be pissed. But as a comic, I can't be pissed because we talk about off-color things. But it was at those moments that I never comprehended that this was a goof. For people. And for some people, it is a goof. And if you think back, remember those Palestinians dancing in the streets?
Yes. Absolutely.
Those sons of... I'll tell you what, I can't forgive that type of thing.
No.
And you know...
Thank God I was not there with a bat. I would have killed somebody.
And Arafat, you know, I think he came out and said, no, this is a misunderstanding. No, jackass. Those are your people in the streets. They were celebrating the death of innocent people. But it's one thing when you... Listen, Al-Qaeda has attacked our military installations. I get that. I don't like it, but I get it. That's a military installation. And they attacked the towers before in 93. I was in college and that, and it was a snowy day. But it wasn't this type of thing. Mm. This was on. And I'll tell you this. In those days, and boy, was I wrong about this. I was really proud of our former president, George W. Bush. He was really good. And those immediate days leading up to, I'm like, thank God Bush is president, because Gore wouldn't have been able to do it. Now, I don't know what Gore would have done. And I thought, well, you know, thank goodness Bush has this type of cabinet with Cheney and Rice and Powell.
I was thinking of the same thing.
It was like a who's who.
Yeah, is anybody going to go kick ass? It's going to be those guys. And also, you know, Giuliani. I think Giuliani did a, you know, stellar job. You know, he
absolutely.
You know,
he was America's. I mean, you talk about a leader. Now, I don't know if I agree with his policy. And I'll tell you this about Giuliani. Before that moment, Giuliani was hated in New York City. Mm. People did not like him. He was cracking down on the DUIs. People were really harsh on that. He was worried about the squeegees and everything. People did not like all the restrictions Giuliani was doing. But you talk about a guy who rose to an occasion.
Who was, you know, and led.
Yeah.
You know, he was right down. He was right down there. Well, their offices were down there. You know, and he jumped right into action.
He didn't. And I'll tell you this. I mean, people know I lean to the left. I think that's, you know, pretty fair. But I'll tell you what. All you conspiracy theorists who think that Bush knew anything about it, you guys are jackasses. You really are.
I can't. You know, I was thinking about that today. These conspiracy theorists are so stupid. What do you think, this was all set up? Are you kidding me?
I think if it's going to happen, Bush isn't going to be in front of a bunch of kids with the cameras rolling and stand there.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, people go, yeah, well, Bush is a moron and he knew everything. If he was a moron, do you think he'd be able to keep a secret like that? You know?
Oh, the stories that Laura could tell. Yeah. Dear Laura, it's worked out perfectly. Yeah. Shame about that Pennsylvania flight, but 3 out of 4 ain't bad.
He also took a lot of heat when he found out about the attacks. He was reading, where was he, in Florida, I believe.
He was reading the school show. That's what I'm talking about.
Right. And the thing about it is, I read his book, and, you know, people go, well, he should have done something right away. He's not Superman. You know, and he wrote in the book that he sat there, and he had a grasps the magnitude of what was going on, and then in his head make decisions, you know, on what to do, how to act, what, you know, where to gather, where to set up a team, while he was sitting there finishing this book.
Well, listen, this Tonight Show is really not about the president. As you know, as much as I would like to debate what he did good and bad, it's really not about the president. It's about the people who lost their lives. It's about the heroic first responders, one of who we have with us, who we're going to get to in a few minutes after this break. It's about our soldiers who are overseas, who are picking up the pieces. Because I remember I was at a Jets game when it was announced that we started our campaign against Afghanistan, and the place just erupted. You know, the USA. I mean, what a feeling of pride. I will tell you this though. You know, people ask, has it changed? It hasn't changed me, but it has changed our country. I'll tell you what. Bin Laden got what he wanted, because we have lost blood and treasure trying to get him, and we got him, but it still goes on. We don't have the freedoms we had. We don't have the carefree lifestyle we had. Our country is broke fighting these wars. We've lost thousands of young men and women trying to get that SOB and fighting periphery wars that perhaps we wouldn't have been able to get into if we didn't do that. So yeah, we got Bin Laden, but he got what he wanted. I mean, he really did. He changed this country. It's not free the way it was. And this country's divided now.
I'll tell you something. The day of 9/11, my brother called me. Mm-hmm. And he goes, are you okay? Well, my brother lives up in by Binghamton. And he goes, are you okay? How are you? Blah, blah, blah. And he told me, he goes, we can't let something like this get us down. We should go about our business. He goes, the Germans bombed Britain every day, London every day.
Blitzkrieg.
They could not break them because the Londoners just went about their business, like, you know, and didn't let it get in their way. You know, they just kept living their lives and not let it get in your way. And you can't, you can try to break us, but you can't break your spirit.
You know what? I think that sentiment is a good place to take a break. Do a few commercials and bring in our first responder. You're listening to Davin Dan on WTBQ.
My name is Davin Rosenblatt of the Davin and Cisco Show. Besides being the host of a radio show, I am a professional stand-up comedian and owner of the ever-growing entertainment company Sidesplitting Productions. As a performer, I have appeared on Comedy Central and performed several tours overseas for our troops. As a company, for over a decade, Sidesplitting Productions has been providing the very best in live stand-up comedy, murder mystery shows, DJs, and celebrity impersonators across the nation. Our entertainers are perfect for restaurants, special family events, and making that corporate event or party a stunning success. For a free consultation and quote, call me anytime at 845-986-7806. That's 845-986-7806. Or check us out on the web at sidesplittingproductions.com. That's SIDESPLITTINGPRODUCTIONS.com. Sidesplittingproductions.com.
Do you know someone who works to help others or has a talent but gets no credit? Well, we know a lot of them. Tune in on Tuesdays from 6 to 7 p.m. and hear them on Inspired Minds, Extraordinary People, hosted by myself, Kevin Armstrong, and Dan Burns here on WTBQ.
Warwick Wildcats football is back here on WTBQ. Listen to the action all season long with me, Rob McClain, and Rich Arnott.
Brought to you by Country Chevy, Celia and Durland Insurance, Apple Valley Pharmacy, Leo Katie's, and Wadeson's.
WTBQ. We'll have some showers around early tonight, then we'll turn mostly cloudy. Some areas of fog towards morning as lows drop to the low 60s. Now some clouds break for sunshine tomorrow. There could be a shower or thunderstorm around, mainly in the afternoon as highs reach 80 degrees. More clouds Friday night, some showers develop towards morning. And looking ahead to Saturday, looks like morning showers, then the sun pops out for the afternoon, 75 to 80. From the WTBQ Weather Center, I'm meteorologist Mike Mahaly.
WTBQ.
I am Bob. We are back. That was Joe mumbling. Oh, you probably heard. And we are live. Yes, we are live on Davin's Den on the mighty WTBQ, 93.5 FM, 1110 AM, and of course WTBQ.com. We are doing our 9/11 show. In the first half of the show, Joe and I gave our very vivid memories of 9/11. If you'd like to call in with your memories, you can call us at 845-651-1110. Frank is waiting for your phone calls, and we are about to talk to our first responder. So if you want to call in and talk to her, ask her questions, or just thank her for what she did on 9/11, you can do that. And again, the number is 845-651-1110. And as always, you can just instant message us on Facebook. But yes, now we are joined by a first responder for 9/11, Kate Elias. How are you, Kate?
Good, good. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming in. You nervous?
A little bit, yeah. I've never done this before.
Trust me, you've done things that are much more dangerous and impressive than this little silly show.
I don't know about that.
You'll be fine. Joe and I still don't know what we're doing, but they keep on putting us up here. It'll be fine. Now, you currently live in the area, correct?
I do, yeah. I'm a local resident.
You
Warwick now.
We live in Warwick. Hey, that's where we found... Joe's coughing off mic. I probably wasn't supposed to reveal that. Are you all right, Joe?
Yeah, I just have a cough. Boy, this is professional, huh? Sorry.
Oh, God. Well, you know, Kate will be my new partner. Joe is having an incident over there.
Sure.
Well, you are an EMT. Can you save him?
Yeah, well, no.
But why?
No. She's like, no, there's no... All right. Instead of saving him, can you make him funny? Can you do that?
Well, no. We'll see. No. Yeah, no, not a specialty of mine.
Okay. So we got the jackassery. See, as much as we try to get the jackassery out of us, we can't. We're jackasses. But now... You were now. I want to make sure I have this correct. On 9/11, you were at the base of the Fallen Tower 2, and you were running a makeshift morgue.
Yeah. Well, in the morning, actually, I worked for a local paramedic company in Rockland, and as soon as the towers were struck, we were all paged out on, I guess, if you will, like a standby. Most of us reported to the station, and we were actually deployed in groups of three, I think it was six or seven trucks, down to... just Manhattan. We were stationed in Chelsea Piers.
And so you guys went from Rockland to Manhattan.
That's right, yeah.
So now, at that point when you came through, had they shut down? Because at one point they shut down all the ways into the city.
They actually, the bridge was actually still open, mm-hmm. and then when we were down there, we heard it was shut down. But of course not to ambulance personnel. There's
right.
still several people coming in. At that point, we were stationed at Chelsea Piers, and we had set up a very large triage, because obviously the local hospitals couldn't handle the mass casualties that they were expecting.
I remember that. They thought they were going to be treating a lot of injured people, and that just never happened.
Yeah, we had a gigantic, and I really do, I have never seen anything so massive. I was in EMS for over 10 years.
Now, you were 20 at the time.
I was,
so you were just a kid.
Yeah, I was only an EMT for 2 years at that point.
You had to be one of the youngest ones down there.
Yeah, probably. Definitely on the units that were down.
I mean, not that if you were older it makes a difference, but it's got to blow your mind when you're a 20-year-old kid.
It was incredible. I think most rescue workers live on adrenaline. I'm sure pretty much everybody will kind of agree with me. So that takes you through most of the motions.
Mm-hmm.
And then you deal with things after, which all of us have, unfortunately, have dealt with, you know, the stressors after. However, when we were stationed down there, we had set up this very large triage. We sat for probably 4 hours, maybe saw five patients for the whole triage, and realized, you know, there wasn't anybody coming in.
What type of injuries did these people have?
We had somebody with a broken arm, a lot of bloody lips, bloody limbs, nothing so serious. I think that the more serious cases were transferred to the, you know, the local hospitals. Mm-hmm. I know NYU accepted, as well as Columbia. You know, but like I said, they had just counted on so many more injuries, and that's why we were set up. After about 4 hours, we were sent home because there was nothing more for us to do. They weren't getting the people in that we had expected. Mm-hmm. So there were several units. Finney was running that triage, and they sent us home. So we went back to Rockland. And
How many were in your group?
There was two paramedics and one EMT, and there was, I believe, six or seven trucks that were sent down.
So there's a decent amount of you.
Right, yeah, okay. Yeah. Not to mention probably every employee when we got back was at the station waiting. You know.
When they called you down there, did you know what was going on? They just said, listen, there's an emergency, we need to go. Or did you know, hey, two towers were just struck? And
yeah, when we got the page, we just got the page to respond that there had been a disaster and that we were responding, and that was pretty much it. We were on standby. All of us were watching the news, so we kind of knew what was going on. And like I said, you just kind of work on adrenaline. I was excited to go help. You know,
That's a 20-year-old. You're like, this is it.
Yeah.
This is what all the trainings come for.
Yeah.
I mean, before you got down to the scene. Now, when you were stationed at Chelsea Pierce, could you see?
Oh yeah.
The whole.
Just the smoke. It was incredible. It was absolutely incredible.
Before you got there, could you comprehend what you saw? Or are you just hearing the radio, the reports?
When you started over the bridge, maybe Fort Lee area, it was incredible. It was just like the magnitude of the damage that had already taken place was just incredible. There was people running across the bridge as we were crossing the bridge. Some of them were covered in debris. It was the most horrific thing that I had ever experienced. It was.
So you're rushing towards this as people are running away from
mm-hmm,
this.
Mm-hmm.
What's going through your mind? I mean, at this point, you're starting to get, oh damn, this is big.
No, even at that point, I don't think, I think that came later on in the evening where I kind of got that ha-ha moment that was, wow. I don't know if I should, you know, this is pretty crazy to be here. But it was, you know, like I said, you work on adrenaline. I had a job to do. I wanted to help the people. That's what every first responder did. And that's just your mindset. You don't think about your life, the other things that are going on. Like I said, I was 20. There was many other people with me that had families already, and but they were in the same mindset. We were there to do a job. You're just totally focused. And like I said before, you deal with all the other stressors after when you're done.
So they send you back after 4 hours.
Right.
So you go back to, I guess, your unit, your home.
Yeah, we were at our station, our headquarters for a while, and three of us kind of like, well, all of us felt just total despair. We wanted to be down there. We wanted to be helping. We were, at this point, still thinking people were just trapped.
That's what
we
for
needed
days.
To dig and get them out. And that was, so that was overwhelming. Even me, 5 foot nothing, 20 years old, I'm gonna go and pick up a shovel and get these people out. That's
right.
What I was thinking. So three of us actually decided to get into our cars, pack up, and go down and help. And that's a
crazy thing to do.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think people get. You just left destruction. The city is shutting down. I mean, I remember because my dad was in the city at the time, worrying about how is he going to get home. He had to go home to Palisades using the bridge. You've seen people running across the bridge. You go, you know what? Let's hop in the car, and we're going to go down. How easy was it to get into the city?
You know, one of the medics that I was with had a car with lights on it, and pretty much any first responder, they were flagging you through.
Okay.
You didn't have to really show. We all had ID with us. We had badges on us. But it wasn't like that. They just kind of flagged you through.
Mm-hmm.
it was pretty surreal because they had stopped all the other traffic.
Did they charge you a toll?
No, they let the toll go.
They suspended toll. Wow, something big must have been going on.
Exactly, yeah. So it was pretty crazy. That was another moment that you were thinking, wow.
Did you leave like 11 bucks just out of guilt?
Absolutely not.
Good girl.
When we got down there, we had to park, obviously, several blocks, and I couldn't even tell you where we parked. The whole aspect of the
evening. Now, you went down the West Side Highway.
Yeah.
And was the West Side Highway shut down at that point?
Yeah. I remember being flagged through at the beginning. Mm-hmm. The bridge was shut down at that point. So
okay.
It was pretty much, there was National Guard on
now,
the bridge.
Now, are there still people wandering around?
Yeah.
And a lot of people were in a daze.
Yeah, they almost looked disorientated. Actually, we were actually looking at one gentleman that looked totally disorientated.
People were in a state of shock.
Yeah, he was trying to make a phone call, which I don't know if you guys remember, but the phones were like totally down at that point.
We now had the signs for loved ones started going up, because I remember that was a big part of 9/11.
Well, I did see that later on in the evening, and that was a pretty hard thing to grasp, because these people were coming around with pictures, pretty mm-hmm. much. I didn't see the signs yet. They probably didn't have time to make them yet, but they were coming around with pictures and just saying, have you seen this person? Have you seen this person? Have you seen this person? It was...
Where are you at this point?
At this point, we're traveling to... we ended up at the base of Tower 2. So we were traveling. We were on foot. It was several blocks. We probably walked 25 blocks, I would say.
Damn!
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was pretty...
No cabs?
No. Nothing was going on.
Well, they probably were afraid for their life. People are looking at me a little funny.
And was there still dust and debris?
Well, that's quite interesting. As we got closer, it got deeper and deeper. And when I was at the base of Tower 2, obviously the destruction and this huge mountain. I can't even
describe
it any other
way. I don't know if people remember, but it wasn't just those two towers. There was a lot of unstable buildings
right.
around you. So you're working in this disaster area, and other buildings can go down at any moment.
That was a big... There was actually several times that windows fell. At one point, we were... later on in the evening, the whole time, it just... you can't even remember what time it was. Nobody really looked at a clock. They had these huge lights on, so it kind of looked like daylight.
Were you starting to get scared, though, at this point? I mean, were you afraid for your safety?
We were in the American Express building at one point, mm-hmm. Helping triage actually injured firefighters or whoever responded actually injured people at that point. Yeah, I was very scared because there was a very large paned window that fell on top of a firefighter, maybe 30 feet from me.
Wow.
And he was okay. He got up and he wouldn't let anybody help him. And this could have killed him. And he definitely had probably a concussion, or he didn't walk very well after that. It was very scary to see. And I remember thinking, this is a war zone.
Did your family know where you were?
Yeah. My parents were not happy.
Yeah, I was going to wonder, because you're 20, you're their baby, you're a 20-year girl. You just got out of there, and you go, how does that conversation go? I'd have to lie.
Yeah, it was short and sweet. My dad probably spoke for, he's probably listening now, he spoke for probably 10 minutes after I hung up the phone, just because it was real short and sweet, and they were not happy.
I'm sure they were extremely proud of you.
Yeah, they were upset. No, they were upset.
Well, yeah, of course they're upset.
Now
but they're proud of you. But listen, no parent wants to hear, yes, mom, dad, I just got back from the war zone, but you know what? I'm going back. Nobody. Well, I thought I raised you smarter than that. Where's your sense?
They told me to call them, and I did make several attempts to do that. Actually, Verizon had come and set up mobile telephone buses. They were buses.
Okay.
But the lines to get on that were so long. And it was, you had a job to do. I wasn't going to sit online. But I did, I think it was around 4 o'clock in the morning. I should have asked my parents. I don't even remember. But I remember thinking it's daylight because of these very large lights.
Right.
And I just remember, and my mom, I woke her out of a dead sleep, and my dad was up. He actually picked up the phone. He was probably glued to the TV like you guys said.
He's worried about his daughter. He wasn't sleeping. Yeah.
Right. So, he was actually awake, and my mom picked up, and I'm like, are you sleeping? I was like so surprised, and she said, yeah, are you okay? And it was, again, short and sweet, and that was pretty much it. Yeah, went back to work.
So now Joe and I, obviously, were not down at the scene the day of or the days after. Describe for the audience what you're seeing.
Okay. So to get back to what I was saying before, as we arrived, the debris got deeper and deeper. And I remember, I mean, I'm only 5-something, like I said, 5'1", 5'2". It was up to my waist at one point, you know, it was
carnage, just building
was,
and...
Who knows? It was a lot of personal effects. As you got closer, you started seeing laptops.
You're wading through this stuff.
Yeah.
And you don't know what it is. You're just focused, I need to get to where I need to get
to. Yeah, it started becoming a realization at that point when you started to see, like, all these personal effects on the floor, people's pocketbooks.
Was anybody going through that stuff, or was it just left?
Not that I saw.
Very rare thing in New York.
Well, there
even
was
the most
a...
most hardened criminal probably couldn't even do that.
There was a UPS truck that actually somebody was attempting to go through the back of, and actually, unfortunately, that UPS driver did pass away.
Oh.
Yeah, and there was a large beam on his truck.
Oh, jeez.
And I believe it was either FedEx or UPS. I apologize, I don't remember exactly. But I think there was like a big argumentative thing going on, I remember.
The cops, in fairness, can't be worried about some delivery truck. I mean, they're right. looking for their brethren, they're right. looking for
yeah,
survivors.
They, yeah, there yeah. was not, no, this was like common people that were, I remember distinctively the Hells Angels, they call themselves the motorcycle gang, they were...
Great, first responders and Hell's Angels. The only ones that can get
Oh,
this
you
thing.
Don't even know. It was a big mosh pit of people. It was
really?
Incredible to turn around and look at
I didn't know the Hell's Angels had a presence
Yeah,
there.
they actually handed us at one point water and stuff. They actually got us masks, which nobody had handed
the
us.
The Hell's Angels had masks?
Yeah, they were on foot and all had their jackets on and were handing them out and waters. Anybody was helping. It was pretty much everybody was helping. So like I said, the destruction was just, the magnitude of it was incredible, and it was literally a war zone.
Are you seeing, as you get closer and closer, body parts?
Yeah.
Like dismembered or bodies?
Yeah, completely.
Had you ever seen anything like that before?
You know, I had, that was actually my fourth year on the ambulance, so it's my second year on it as an EMT. I had experienced a few very gruesome calls at that, you know, up until that point, and... yeah, but nothing like this. I had never... That was pretty much what I did for...
So how are you stealing yourself to get through this?
I think, now when I look back on it, I think it was just adrenaline. There was all of these firefighters on bucket brigades, and also my two friends that were with me that night, they were put on a bucket brigade. And by bucket brigade, I just mean they were bringing buckets of debris onto tables, and we were sorting through them, and... putting things in body bags and things to the side. And there was actually Cornell medical students, and I got thrown into this. I don't even know how. You just kind of I was just put into this area, which was a makeshift morgue at the base of Tower 2, and that's what I did while my friends were on the bucket brigade.
So you're sorting through body parts.
Yeah. It's pretty gruesome.
Oh, I should have you know this before we continue. This is from Joe and the Soldiers. The Soldiers thank your guest, and three wants to know if she's single. Fellas know she's single. She's very married to a former Marine.
A big Marine.
A big Marine, and he's an EMT too, so he's a tough guy, and I know you guys wouldn't want to cross the Marines. But yeah, I know she's a catch, but she's already taken. Sorry, fellas.
Thank you for everything you guys do. My heart goes out to you and your family. Thank you so much.
Good thing your husband's not in studio. I know him. He'd be like punching me now for that.
I'm sorry. It'd be fine.
No, you're not. You say you'd be kicking my butt. He's got a short temper. I love him. It's a little crazy. As you got to be if you're a Marine.
Exactly.
All right. So you're wading through this. You're seeing these body parts. I mean, how long are you down there for doing this?
The makeshift morgue was probably, I think, about 9 hours. It went so quick. I don't really know time frames. It kind of all melted into one big thing.
Is there a smell in the air?
The smell was so intense, and for several months, I smelled that smell.
Really?
Yeah.
What is it? What, I mean, what is it? Is it, like, is it just like a decaying body, or
yeah.
what is it?
Jet fuel, or
there was a lot of jet fuel. But it was just, I don't even. It was putrid. It was absolutely putrid.
I'm seeing it. It all comes back to you 10 years later.
I suffered like many other EMTs and medics and whoever.
Do you still have like those flashbacks and everything?
You know, I did for a very long time. I was in pretty intensive treatment for post-traumatic stress disorder, which I was totally in denial that I had.
They usually are. Because, yeah. you know, people are geared to think that, no, I'm fine. I'm not. You know, I don't have this going on.
Right.
You know, that's just the way we're trained.
You kind of almost feel like I didn't lose a best friend. I didn't lose my mother or father or my partner. And I felt like I had no right to have those feelings, which I know is a very big part of post-traumatic stress mm-hmm. that you deny, you know. So I did. I had very intensive, you know, therapy after for it.
Well, I hope we don't screw that up with this. But you know what? We got a couple more questions for you, but I do want to thank you for coming on the air and doing this, because I know this was going to be hard. We talked about this.
Yeah.
This is gonna be hard. So in a way, I feel like, you know what, you served your country 10 years ago by doing what you did, and you're serving them again, because like I said, people don't get it. I mean, I couldn't even get it. I lived a few miles from it. I saw it happen, but I'm never going to get what you went through. There's just no way. I'm never going to have to do that bucket brigade. I, you know, God willing, am never going to be part.
Yeah, I hope you never have to. I hope, you know, unfortunately, the people that did go through it, I hope that we never have to see those things again. You know, I don't know that that's reality, unfortunately, but...
Well, speaking of the reality of that, how do you feel about them not having many first responders at the 9/11 ceremonies on Sunday?
It's very upsetting. For years, I actually got in the mail, because, you know, you get on these lists, these first responder lists. American Red Cross, rather, has these lists, and so far and so on. But they have all these names of people, so you get invitations. I was always invited to the Ground Zero memorial service every anniversary. I never attended one of them. In fact, I haven't been back since. But I was always invited to them, and you know, I've saved all of them to show my children. And you know, when I heard that this year, it was heart-wrenching. Absolutely heart-wrenching to hear that. This was actually the first year that I didn't get an invite with the presidential seal and
but
all that.
But that's horrible. I mean, you waded through a pile of dirt, you sorted through the most horrible things, and they don't even have the common decency to invite you and all the other people that went down there.
That's what's upsetting to me, is that, you know, I did very little. You know, I'm just speaking about my experience.
No, you didn't. You were down there doing a very
important
thing.
There were people that were there for months. There's been people that have been there for years doing what I did, you know, for several hours that night.
Well, you know, I find your attitude... Listen, towards what you did, very common with the soldiers that I encountered when I was in Iraq, and also with our pal,
I'm sure Joe and the folks will agree as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, it's like this, to the public servant, just for the most part, has this humbleness about them that I really didn't do it. You guys don't get what you did. You were down there when the crap went down, when it was at its worst, and you waded through it. You got to be very strong to do that. Most people, I mean, you ran into it like the firefighters did and the police did. You ran to it while most sane people ran away from
it. Not only did she run to it, she ran to it, came back, jumped in another vehicle, and ran back to it.
Yeah, that's a special type of crazy.
Absolutely. It's definitely, to me, that just totally describes.
Would you do it again? Could you do it again?
At this point in my life, I thought about this question actually today, if you were going to ask me that, I said.
I'm predictable.
Think about that. At this point in my life, I would say absolutely. I would help anybody that was in need. I'm in a totally different
Well, you're a parent now.
Yeah, I'm a parent, right? I mean, two beautiful babies and another one on the way. Oh. So
yeah, I mean, it's a completely different animal.
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy enough when you go down and you're a 20-year-old and you got your parents and everything, but now you're a mom. Sorry, fellas. Now you're a mom and you got a husband. I mean, so you're telling me, yeah, I'll do it again. People just don't get that level of sacrifice.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely would help anybody. I would rethink things. I unfortunately was very affected by September 11th, which so many people were. But personally, I don't know that I can I could handle anything at that point, but I don't think I would hesitate if somebody was...
Well, you're still an active EMT.
I'm actually not as active as I would love to be. I still currently hold the certification.
Well, you got a lot on your plate.
Yeah, I unfortunately don't get to volunteer anymore. I have a different career. Mm-hmm. Full-time worker, full-time mommy, so there's not a lot of time that I could donate right now, but yes, I still hold the certification.
How is being down there and going through that, how's that changed your life?
Like I said, I suffered terribly from the post-traumatic stress disorder. Actually, when we came home, within that first week, I quit my job as an EMT. Had terrible, terrible nightmares. I couldn't sleep, but it was all just part of the post-traumatic stress disorder. And I think it took so much time of healing to get over that, that I think I feel it just has made me a different person. I think I'm just totally different than
I was.
Are
you more steeled, more jaded?
Maybe the opposite, to be honest.
Really? It opened you
mm-hmm.
up, really?
Yeah, I think I was pretty jaded.
Do you feel that you appreciate life more, you know?
I do. I live every day. I try very hard to live every day to the fullest because I do realize how quickly, in the blink of an eye, your whole life can be just devastated so massively. It's just incredible that you... could have everything taken from you.
Do you think most Americans get what New York was like 10 years ago? Do you think most people get that?
As far as feeling, an overwhelmingly safe feeling walking around, things like that, or what?
Just the trauma that it did to, and Joe were talking about this, Joe and I were talking about this a little earlier in the show, just the trauma that it did to New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Connecticut, Washington, D.C., Virginia, Maryland. Right. Do you think it's more like a Northeast, Mid-Atlantic thing, or do you think everybody gets it?
I think everybody gets it. My husband's brother is a U.S. Marshal in Florida area, and he is... he was also very affected by it. So I, and that's where my husband is from, and most of his friends are still very, affected by it. I don't think other parts of the world, like you said, get it at all. And, unfortunately, they see so much devastation, that, maybe they don't even realize any of the magnitude. But I do think other parts.
Do you think the memory of 10 years ago is still fresh in people's mind, or time's made it fade?
Yeah, I think definitely time's made it fade for several people, but not, I don't think many of the first responders.
I don't think the first responders, I don't think the people, because, you were fortunate, you didn't lose a partner, but a right. lot of the first responders, police, fire, EMTs, they lost people.
Yeah, it was
chiefs
so
and,
unfortunate.
Veterans.
So unfortunate.
How did you feel when he killed Bin Laden?
I'm married to a Marine.
I know, and him, he was like, damn, I wish I was there.
There was an overwhelming excitement. I was actually woken up to tell me that they got Bin Laden out of a dead
Well, usually it's sex, but tonight it's a Bin Laden killing.
Exactly.
Was there a feeling of closure? Because a lot of people, myself included, in a way, had kind of a feeling of closure, in a sense.
I didn't feel like that, because I just feel like he has so many sick followers, and so many, it's such a strong little unit that he's developed that I didn't feel so much of a closure with it. I didn't. To me, I kind of disassociated myself to him I can't even call him a human, an animal. I just don't even think, I know ultimately he was responsible for ordering all of this, but I just don't think, I just think it was, I don't know, I disassociated.
Would you
him.
Rather that we had caught him, and instead of killing him, caught him and...
No, he needed to die, yeah.
So you think it was the right...
Oh yeah, for sure, absolutely, 100%. I'm thrilled that we caught him. I'm so thankful to the many servicemen and women that, risk their lives every day to go and get these horrible, horrible individuals.
Your kids are young. Your kids are real young. Do they know what their mommy did?
It's funny. We were actually at fireworks recently, and somebody came up, and he was an EMT, and he said to my daughter, she said, do you work with my daddy? Because he was in uniform, and he said, no, I used to work with your mommy. And you know, I did this job for 10 years, mm-hmm. and, you know, I'm just so different. My four-year-old has no idea that I did any of this. She said, no, my mommy doesn't work on an ambulance. She's a nurse. So she has, you know, it's amazing to me. So I have tried to explain to her. She asked me about the towers, and I did tell her.
Really?
I didn't tell her that we had killed him, but my husband, I think, did. I did explain to her that a very bad man, you know, just kind of, you know, made these planes crash into the towers. And
well, I think that is going to have to be where we leave it, because I see we are up against the clock. Kate, on behalf of myself and Joe and everybody here at the station,
thank you for coming in.
Thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for doing what you do. Listen, guys, next week we'll be back with the Jackassery. I promise you, but we just felt that this needs to be done. Up next,
wanted to reflect after 10 years, and you know, hopes and prayers, you know, all the hopes and prayers with all the people that gave their lives to the first responders.
Up next, Psychic Cindy. Listen, if you love us, tell a friend. If you hate us, tell no one. Either way, keep on listening. We'll see you next week.
Your community radio station since 1969.
From ABC News, I'm Brad Wheelis, the president's jobs bill.
You should pass it right away.
More on that in a